Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer in store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. But obviously it's Daniel Whiffen, our Olympic gold medalist, and his family, his identical twin brother Nathan, who he said when he walked out to the blocks last night, 18,000 cheering fans, various different swimmers, he could hear above all that, or below all that, or in a mysterious frequency, he could hear the voice of his brother Nathan. And fellow swimmer and trainer. He has an older sister, Beth, an older sister, Ben, who runs a gym, and that is in Enniskillen. He's also head coach of Enniskillen Lakelanders, and he runs a gym called WFN Gym. Maybe we can get Ben on. They also have a pet tortoise called what does the fastest man in the swimming pool in the world have as a pet? He has a pet tortoise. The slowest animal in the world, and it's called Flash. During their primary school years, Nathan and Daniel performed in some of the local amateur drama productions, and they also appeared in CITV's Danny's Castle, starring Danny Harmer. They performed in the Game of Thrones in the famous Red Wedding scene with their sister Beth, who played one of Walder Frey's daughters. Whilst at St. Patrick's Grammar School, both Daniel and Nathan performed in the Frankenstein Chronicles, starring Sean Bean. This was one of their favourite parts, as Daniel, our Olympic gold medalist, had to pretend he had been electrocuted, and Nathan had to wear a full prosthetic arm and lie in a coffin, which was dug up from the ground. This is the advantage of being an identical twin, as they both played the same person in the episode. In January 2009, Daniel and Nathan participated in the School Aid Romania project, did lots of fundraising, and actually travelled to Romania and indeed India. And when they were doing the humanitarian work in Romania and India, they actually, before they left, they tracked down a local swimming pool where they could still train morning, noon and night. The COVID hit. This is the thing we should remember about every one of those Olympians. At the minute, every single contestant. COVID hit in March 2020, but the boys managed to stay swimming in the Performance Centre until the Olympics was cancelled and the National Aquatic Centre was closed. During lockdown at home, wait for this, they continued swimming in a paddling pool with a tether and coached by Martin, who was their great mentor, who was now in Dubai over Zoom, and he had moved to work in Dubai. They also participated in sessions with the Performance Centre and Swim Ireland over Zoom. They've moved to Loughborough University, where both of them are studying computer science. And at a recent Stockholm Open, as you know, he smashed the Irish record, now the world record, and now the Olympic record. It's just an incredible achievement. Let's hear his voice. Is the voice there? Daniel.
I'm just having the family here. I heard Nathan when I walk out, which is kind of incredible. There's 20,000 people here, and I hear my own twin. Seeing them, it just makes it so much better.
And remember, as you watched it last night, as we all did, 800 metres, a 16 length of a 50-metre pool. It's some endurance, but wait until he goes into 1,500-metre freestyle at the weekend. He has some endurance, obviously. I should know a bit about this, given that I am the father of three twins, as people call them. They're triplets, though they hate being called triplets. He never called them that, Ronan, Sean and Ellen. I don't think there is telepathy between them. They tell me there isn't. The only thing I know about them is that they have a WhatsApp group called Womb Mates. But in terms of dressing, same one as two boys and a girl. We never dressed them the same. Never, they were never in the same class in school. The only thing that that struck me once is when they were about nine, their respective godparents took them separately on their birthdays into town to buy them clothes. And the three of them came back from three different locations with three different buyers, so to speak. And the three of them came back dressed exactly the same, believe it or not. But that's the only little bit of telepathy I ever came across with my three twins, so to speak. Now, Neil Tully and Fergal Tully, you know them all from Gogglebox. Neil, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. You're an identical twin.
Well, kinda.
Okay. What's it like being a twin?
It's got pros and cons. Okay. Mostly it's good.
Well, what's the pros?
Yeah.
Take her time. Take her time. Take her time.
I listen to somebody. You listen. There's somebody better you can always count on.
Okay.
That's for sure.
And do you talk to Fergal every day?
Numerous times. Numerous times.
Numerous times every day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably about every 2-3 hours.
And is there a sixth sense? There's not, is
no.
there?
No.
No. Okay. Are you closer now than you were as two boys growing up, tipping each other?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Far closer. When you're young, it's kind of... It's not a stigma, but people, like in your school, people don't know the difference, and everything's half the first joke is, that you or your brother? Not funny. I've said it to me 100 times. But like, when confirmation came around, communion came around, you got half what your older brother and younger brother's got, but listen.
Because the two of you appeared everywhere together, communion, confirmation, and instead of giving you a tenner, you'd get a fiver each, if you're lucky.
Yes, exactly. Okay. But you didn't mind. Okay. Money wasn't an issue at that time.
Now, Neil, do you know who we have on the other line?
Who?
Come on, think.
Fucking EJ Fergal, is it?
Oh, Jesus.
Sorry, for God's sake.
Fergal. See, there's celebrity.
Hey, Fergal.
Fergal.
I warned you, he's in bad language.
Fergal, how are you? Many sets of identical twins are there in Cavan?
Well, there's three famous ones anyway.
Okay.
There's the A-list celebrities on... You've got Nev Maguire and his brother, and you've got Fiona Maguire and Lisa.
The golfers.
Well, then we're a different alphabet when it comes to celebrities. We're not even dead, we're a different alphabet when it comes to celebrities. But no, to be fairly famous, the Cavan's famous for twins, all right.
Oh, is it? Okay. Okay.
Twins and main heroes.
Okay. And Neil said you've actually got closer as you've got older.
It would be close enough. Now, Neil's closer to me now. I would be close to him if he'd be close to me, you know.
Okay. you're more likeable, is that what you're saying?
He's the bride, you know.
And Fergal, in terms of your lives, did you study similar subjects and go to work in similar jobs?
No, I farm there. Neil wouldn't know what a cow looked like, you know.
Okay, what do you do, Neil?
A sales manager for a company in Dublin here.
Yeah. Okay.
And he's a sales rep as well. Don't tell him. He's a part-time farmer. It makes out to be full.
And don't get the secret out, Neil.
And Neil, why would you not? Did you turn against farming, or there wasn't the opportunity?
He wouldn't work.
Probably would.
What?
I tell you why. I like farming. I like the technology of farming, and I talk about farming. But as it comes to farming, I was no good at it.
Okay. Well, what about
five brothers in our house? You know.
Okay. Well, would you be no good at the 7 days a week, 365, non-stop farming?
No. I work 8 days a week, too.
Do you?
Neil works too.
And Fergal, when you were teenagers, what was it like? Did you compete for girlfriends, for example?
No.
Or boyfriends, or whatever?
Neil got the girls. I just sat in my room and watched football.
Did you? Okay.
There's one good advantage of being a twin.
What's that?
When you shifted a girl who wasn't pleasant to look at, I always told everyone it was Neil. That was Neil last night. That wasn't me.
Fergal, you have a lovely way with words. What did you say when you shifted a girl who wasn't pleasant to look at?
Yeah.
That's hardly a Cavan girl, is it?
Is that the dames of the woods?
And Fergal, how have you acclimatised to your newfound celebrity on Gogglebox?
I mean, I don't have to acclimatise. I live in Cavan.
So you're famous.
You ever hear the saying, you're never a prophet in your own land? People are sick of saying to me in Cavan. So they said, that's them eagles again. But Neil gets lots of in Dublin. He loves that celebrity lifestyle in Dublin. He's rubbing shoulders with Nevin Maguire. And what's her name, Neil, you hang around with? What's the model name?
Brenda Gilson.
God, you're up there, Neil.
I hang around with all my mates here now. I've average age of 72.
And Neil, did the two of you sit beside each other? Were you in the same class?
We were in the same bedroom.
And what was that like, being in the same class? Were you always being compared? Did any teacher ever say, Neil, if you were as bright as Fergal, or vice versa?
No.
No.
I don't think so.
Fergal, did anyone ever say to you, Fergal, if you were as bright as Neil, or vice versa?
No, they just said I'm the handsome one, Joe.
And that trumped everything.
That trumped everything, yeah.
Okay. And
we used to wear the same clothes years ago, and we used to irritate us when they put an N and an F on the jumper. We'd tear the N and F off. No clothes.
To differentiate.
Yeah.
But Fergal, would you know, and I'm serious now, when you see Neil or whatever, would you know by the look of him, which is the look of you as well, you're identical, would you know by the look of him if he was in good form or bad, before he even opened his mouth?
Yeah, he's a hard scowl on him, Joe, when he's in bad form, you know. Not a scowl on him, you know. And usually, the only two things put him in bad form, he lost on the races, or the woman's given out to him or something like that. Or I'm given out to him. It's usually when I'm giving out to him. He goes out to me a good bit, though.
And Neil, does Fergal have a horrid scowl on him, be times?
No, he's always in good gym. I've never seen him in bad gym. He never grumps and groans. Do you ever watch TikTok?
Of course I do, yeah.
Do you watch Fergal and TikTok scowling about being a poor farmer?
Oh, hello.
You should know what scowl we know.
Scowl. By the way, is it true you've started a business since your newfound fame?
Yeah, we've Toy Twin Socks business. Started about a year ago.
Well, then, will you take the opportunity? As you said yourself, Fergal said you're from Cavan. Take the opportunity for some free advertising. What's the name of the company again?
Toy Twin Socks. Go on to Instagram and go to the link Toy Twins, and we have a range of socks on the internet there.
Okay.
Also, you can go to a few shops around Ireland and have them. But mostly, you'll see us on TikTok and Instagram pushing the socks and pushing our comedy. Well, Fergal's comedy.
And how's
it? But the range of socks is funky socks and not. Your average socks. I wear odd socks all the time, so you'd see a sock there, a chicken sock. You could wear them matching the chicken and the egg or the cow and the milk. So they're popular enough now.
That's good. And it's going well, is it?
It's going well. Could go better, but then McCaffrey, man, I'd never be happy.
And Neil, who's the brains? Fergal, who's the brains behind the sock enterprise?
He's the brains, I've the duty.
In fairness, I get Fergal a lot of the work, but I do, but in the background, I do the building up, and it's me that got some goggle boxes. Probably me that got the sock company going. But yeah, Fergal's a great head.
And did you always wear odd socks?
I suppose. I was known for wearing, I wear odd socks all the time.
And is that
If I'm wearing matching socks, I couldn't find odd socks. You know, but
I know some people wear odd socks for look. They believe.
Yeah, well, I can wear it for look.
Okay. Are you filming Gogglebox at the minute?
No. They don't start filming in August, end of August. Now, to be honest with you, Joe, I don't think we're going back, and it was going to. Let the new people come on. They're sick of looking at us.
And are you not going back because you've decided you're too big for it, or they've decided you're too small?
No, we're just going to move on to something else, you know.
Yeah, okay.
You know, we're building on Instagram and TikTok. TikTok has gone up by 2,000 in the last 12 hours. Anyway, we just one post to talk about it last night.
That'll go up now. It'll go up now. Stay there, Neil and Fergal Tully. Kathleen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you? You're an identical twin.
I am.
You're Kathleen, and your twin is your sister is Breed.
Breed. Okay. Yeah.
And is there anything in this telepathy?
I definitely think there is. I was just saying to one of your producers there, we got married in 98 and I was living in the States and my sister was here, and we'd agreed on the wedding dress, the same colour would be white, it wouldn't be a cream and white. And when I came home with my dress, no pictures taken or anything, the addresses were identical.
And were you married on the same day?
Yeah, we had a double wedding.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. And, yeah. And you married two different fellas, obviously.
We married two friends. So we got married in May 1998. My father gave the two of us away together.
So he was your father was
dad passed you, away.
Oh God! Yeah. Your father was running
he passed
up
away
and
four
down.
Months ago.
Okay, God rest him. So he was running up and down the aisle that day with yourself and Breed. Okay, so you got married. You had a double wedding, and that went down okay with the husbands, did it?
Yeah, went fine. We even went on honeymoon together. Then we went back to the States, and a couple of years later, we came back, and Breed was pregnant, and she had a little boy, and 8 months later, I had a little boy.
Okay.
And 2.5 years later, we were pregnant together, and we had the babies 9 days apart.
Wow. So what about knowing how each other is, our intuition?
Well, what happens to us quite a lot is that I could be talking to somebody in conversation and we could be all together at a table, but Breed and I wouldn't be sitting together. And half an hour later, she could ask that person the exact same question I've asked. And you can tell by their reaction. Your sister just asked me that about a half hour ago. The exact same way.
And do you know each other's mood when you meet?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a given. You can see it anyway in our face. We know each other's expressions. Even when we're out, we've done this thing, look across at each other. Somebody might come in and it wouldn't be necessarily anything bad or anything, but we'd be like thinking the same thing. Mm-hmm. And we've looked at each other and gone yes or no.
And then, Kathleen, I asked Neil and Fergal, when you were younger, was it tougher? Were you in the same class? Were you dressed the same? Were you tipping?
We were. Mom and Dad dressed us exactly the same. We were in the same classes all up through secondary school, primary school and secondary. I think the hardest part was you'd never pick to be a team captain or because the person picking would feel bad for the other twin.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yet we always felt we'd love if one got picked and the other one would support.
Yeah.
A bit like the twins in the Olympics now yesterday, in fairness. When you hear that one is swimming and the other supported him all the way, he was a swimmer as well. I was really impressed with that. I thought that's
Nathan
lovely.
Nathan is a swimmer. And the same with the wonderful Maguire sisters.
Leona Maguire, the golfer. Exactly. They don't... People think that they shouldn't be asked because you're picking one over the other.
Okay.
But I don't necessarily think as a twin, the twin thinks that.
And are you closer now, Kathleen, with Breed than you were as teenagers or in your 20s?
I think we've always been close, but then I went away to the States for 6 years. But while I was away, I have letters and she's letters that we wrote to each other every week. And we kept them, and then... That was in 1994 to 98, and towards the end of 2000, we came home in 2000, and just before that, of course, it was always phone calls, and it was every day, twice a day, even though we were away. So we were always close. Now, don't get me wrong, Joe, if we have an argument, you know about it too, like we'd hang up at each other.
Okay.
But we'd phone each other half an hour later like nothing happened.
So, Kathleen, you think there is an intuition?
There is.
Can you tell me who's on the other line now?
Oh, don't tell me she's on because she's in work. I don't know if she'd get on.
Well, she is just coming on now. She's like, Breed.
Yes.
How are you, Breed?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Kathleen has spilled all your secrets.
Has she?
Oh, I don't know how we allowed go out. How we allowed half them go out before the watershed. Breed, what
I was normally listening to you. But today I wasn't. I was in the middle of doing something. I can't believe that I'm on the radio.
Okay, Breed, tell us what was it like being an identical twin with Kathleen?
You always had a best friend.
Ah. Now, Kathleen said...
We'd all be best friends.
No matter what, like, we'd have our ups and downs ourselves. But we're individuals, you know?
Now, did you... I don't know whether you heard my introduction, but I was saying that Nathan and Daniel Whiffen, they're identical, and they've got some acting parts because the two of them can play the same part, if you follow me.
Yeah.
Did that life ever... Yes.
We could have once upon a time, except I let my hair grow grey, she won't.
You let your hair...
No, I'm not letting the old lady in.
I
don't mind letting her in.
So, Breed, you let your hair go au naturel.
Yeah, au naturel, yeah.
And Kathleen has the head. What are you saying? Yeah. What do you say to me? Kathleen is the same.
I'm not letting the old lady in.
Yeah, good woman, good woman, good woman. Now, Breed, Kathleen was saying that people maybe sometimes were overly sensitive to the fact that you were twins. For example, if they praise one, they'd have to praise the other, and that meant when you were being picked for a captain or leadership position, that they'd kind of ignore the two of you because they didn't want to upset one of you.
It's amazing. I heard, is it Nathan Mookin talking this morning about his brother?
Yeah.
And you know the first thing I felt? She was always better than me at Camogie, but I always loved the idea that she was up there.
Okay.
So I can understand the way Nathan felt about his brother. I heard him on the radio this morning talking.
What a wonderful...
There's a pride there.
Yeah, what a wonderful family. Did you hear? Rachel and Jonathan, the parents, they're just... phenomenal. They're so down to earth, and the dedication of that whole family. Because when you're swimming, as you know, go back to Gary O'Toole's family or any family. When you're swimming at that level, it's a whole family enterprise of getting up at 4:30. Who's bringing them to the pool? Who's collecting them? Anyway, Breed and Kathleen. Kathleen, first.
Yeah.
Do you have similar tastes in food or dress or drink?
We would,
Dress, definitely. Okay, food. Because the reason I'm asking you that question about, I think it's about 10 years ago now on Liveline, we were contacted by a woman. She was in Dublin, actually, and it was the day after the bank holiday. Actually, I think it was August, Tuesday. And she's been driven back to the airport. This is a long story. Driven back to the airport by a taxi driver, and she's crying in the back of the taxi. And the taxi driver said, "Why are you crying?" And she said, every weekend I have free, I come to Dublin to try and find my sister. Okay, her sister was called Vicky, who I have not seen in 33 years. Okay, they're from an Indian background living in the UK, and Surjit came on the program, and between the jigs and the reels, the two of them had been reunited by Friday after 33 years. Vicky was living in the country, I think in around Westmeath. I hope both of them are still well. Anyway, so they were brought on the Late Late Show with Tubbs, and. I was on as well, and afterwards we all went into the hospitality room, okay. And I went over to Vicky. Now remember, these people have not seen; they only met that night. They haven't seen each other in 33 years. Both of them would have been teenagers. And I said to Vicky, "What will you have?" And she said, "I'd have a vodka and tonic, no ice and no lemon, just a slice of orange." Okay. Went over, got it. Went completely separately over to Sergio and said, "Sergio, what would you have?" Said, "I'd have a vodka and tonic, no ice, with a slice, no lemon, with a slice of orange." And there, now they weren't, they were sisters who hadn't seen each other. But anyway, that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah.
So how often...
I believe that. Our wedding dress is Kathleen.
Yeah, she told that story.
I told the story about the wedding dress with Rick. Breed, what were you thinking about there when he said about one twin finding another twin? What was in your head? In what way, like? Were you thinking about looking for somebody, but it's kind of different to this?
Yeah, it's a different story. Okay. Different story. We've another story, Joe, that we could give you.
It's not to do with twins.
And who were you looking for?
Our brother.
And did you find him?
No.
And did you ever know him?
No.
He was adopted in the United States.
Ah.
Wow. To a church over there, so we've been looking for him since my mum died.
And Breed, what age would your brother be now, do you think?
He'd be about 55, 56.
Oh, that's young.
Yeah.
And obviously, don't give me a surname if he has one. But when was he adopted to the States?
He was living in the state. My mother was living in the States.
Okay.
And she gave him up for adoption, and it's closed adoption in New York. It's not like you can just,
closed track.
We've my sister contacted a solicitor in the United States, and they said, you're wasting your time because it's closed. It's very different here.
Yeah. But you've seen
recently. And we tried 23andMe and Ancestry.com. Okay. And we have a sister living in New York as well. And there's a big story to it, but
But you know, Kathleen,
why I said that is because when you were talking about the twins finding each other, I was thinking, as we're thinking, when I'm thinking about Patrick, his name is Patrick.
Patrick, we don't
know if he is now, but he was Patrick.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, as more and more people get onto that DNA database, for whatever reason, a lot of companies offer it as a gimmick of free with a bottle of whiskey or whatever. As more and more people get on that database, the chances increase of a connection one way or another. Isn't that true? Okay, stay with us. Stay with us.
Yeah,
we're talking.
Okay.
Are we talking about identity? Yes, we are. We are. Back after the break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie. Michael Carruth. Michael, good afternoon.
Hey Joe, how are you keeping?
How you doing, old pal? Gold medal, 1992, Olympics, Barcelona. I remember you hitting about 6 feet off the ground. You jumped, and by the way, the whole country jumped. Which is, I'm glad there was only 5 million of us. There would have been an earthquake. Now, Michael, first of all, what do you want to say to Daniel Whiffen about winning a gold medal? What's ahead of him?
Firstly, welcome to the Gold Club, if I'm allowed to say so.
Yes,
somebody hasn't already invited him. Phenomenal, absolutely brilliant to watch him do it, and we were all screaming at the television here last night as well. And, it's become a great Olympic Games. How well we're doing in all sports as well. It's just phenomenal how well they're doing, and that's a credit to all the coaches and families and everybody else who's helping out with them. So it's phenomenal watching it now at this stage. We have to get the boxing into a little bit of a gear. We lost our first three fights, but we have to come on back there with a few wins. So it's getting to the stages now where you have to start winning now, because you have to keep winning, because you're in the medal stages now at this stage.
Well, if Kelly wins today at 5 o'clock,
She medals,
and that means she'll be a double Olympic medalist, which is fantastic.
Absolutely.
But people know that you're also, you're one of three who were born at the same time and the same day to the same mother and the same father, Martin, Michael, and William.
Yeah, I was the last born of the three of us.
Okay.
As I always say to the other two, I keep the best last. So that's it.
Okay. And so, what was it like growing up as one of three, as a triplet?
Basically, it was a kind of thing like we didn't need friends. We had friends, but we never needed friends. We needed to go out and play a game of ball out the back lane. We play with one another, in that regard, So, but we did have a lot of friends growing up and schoolmates and things like that. But, we also looked after one another greatly as well. If anybody was to get into some kind of practice, the other two would come in, So it's, you always had two little bodyguards, which as well. But they were great for me in the sense that when we were sparring and things like that, getting ready for championships, like Irish championships or Dublin or whatever we're going to be playing, you don't really have a fear of your brother where you might have of another lad in your boxing club,
Okay.
When you get to spar your brother, it's hell or die, and that's it. You're going to have to work yourself to the bone to win the spar. And it brought me on leaps and bounds as well, because I was getting some of the best spars you could get in the world off my two brothers.
Because boxing is in your family.
And then, my dad always had an inkling with the three of us as well. If one of us was good at something, we'd stick it, and the other two would go to something else.
Okay.
And that was my dad's belief of it as well, that I was the best boxer. So the other two didn't you know, they didn't follow the boxing as much as I did. They were finished by about 16 years old, the two of them were, you know. So but I had a dream. I wanted to go to the Olympic Games. I wanted to win the Olympic Games, and thankfully it happened, you know. So.
And what was it like in school, Michael? Were the three of you in the same class?
Three of us in the same class. We, you know, when you used to get the learning teacher, Joe, we're the older guys now, that you used to get the learning teacher. We used to change our names all the time because we had tags on the names, and she'd be calling Martin and Michael would stand up, and our real teachers told us to do it, you know, to see what they were like, to see if they lose their head and things like that. But school was great between us. We had a great gang of lads with us, you know. I mean, I think in our primary school there was something like 49 lads in our class.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how big the school was. And our head teacher, Mr. Barrett, was a huge boxing fan. And unfortunately, he died about a year prior to me winning the Olympic Games.
Wow.
You know, and it would have been one of his proudest moments, you know, one of his pupils being the Olympic champion. So, but it wasn't to be.
And could you relate to what Daniel said last night, that when he walked out onto the bank and headed for the blocks, and you heard the roar of 18,000 people. He said he could hear Nathan, so he could hear his twin brother's voice.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose sometimes your ears are trained for that as well, that you don't realise you've done it. Like when I was boxing down the National Stadium or a place like that, I would hear Martin O'Williams' voice rather than listen to me dad's voice, believe it or not, in the corner where I should have been listening to me dad's voice and not to both theirs, you know. But it's a thing that I don't know. It's true. They were identical triplets as well. They're identical twins. I don't know. Mm-hmm. These are written in the stars. I don't know. So it's something else.
And Michael, I was asking Kathleen and Breed and Neil and Fergal, have you similar tastes in food or clothes or holidays or hobbies?
Food for us, we came from a family of 10, you know what I mean? And we had 6 boys and 4 girls. And basically, whatever was put in front of you, you ate it. And that was it. So you didn't have any, you know, choices in that regard, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My mother was a fantastic cook, don't get me wrong, and things like that. But, not really. The two of us, now the three of us love, like, a nice glass of red wine, you know?
Okay.
I suppose that's, you know, rather than lager and things like that. I suppose I don't really know the food, you know, what food they like and what I like, you know what I mean? I wouldn't think we're too far away from one another, you know,
But given, Michael, that life moves on and families and jobs and children and movement, are you closer now than you were when you were in your 20s, when you were at the height of your boxing career, which went on for longer than that?
We the three of us are. I'm the head coach at Drimna Boxing Club.
Okay.
And Martin and William are coaches in the club as well. You know.
Okay.
So
brilliant.
With that, we see one another a minimum 4 times, 5 times a week. You know what I mean? So we're on the phone to one another and getting boxes to go here, there, and everywhere. You know. So we play a huge role in our boxing club, in Drimna Boxing Club. There's no kind of gap between it. Like we haven't seen one another in 6 months. That's not happened. We're lucky enough to see one another in 6 days. You know. So we're still there, flying the flag for Drimna and trying to get one of our lads or girls to the next Olympic Games.
Well done. Yeah. And which your father, who I had the privilege of meeting, was a gifted carpenter. He was a gifted craftsman. I know you're good with your hands, Mike.
Well, William was an electrician. And, Martin was a carpenter.
Okay.
And then now, since then, they've changed jobs. Both of them now are in post. You know?
Okay.
I joined the army at 18 years old.
Right.
It was probably one of the best things I ever done, because they allowed me freedom in a sense that they put me in the gymnasium where I could train all the time, and
great.
You know, if I ever need leave or anything like that, they looked after me. That, so it was one of the best things ever, and the army really were a huge, huge inspiration to me, and obviously a help to me in winning the Olympic goals as well. You know, so mine and William, we're kind of tradesmen at the same, but they work now on post.
Okay, and you're in your late 50s, and they're around the same age.
Yes, we're 57, just at the start of this month, the 9th of July.
And I know your father passed, Michael. Is your mother still with us?
No, Ma went 2 years later as well.
Ah, okay.
Yes,
because I met her.
I met her as well down in Wexford.
Yeah.
Yes, they both died in the month of February, so it was that was it. You know, you have to get on with it.
So fingers crossed, as you say, and Desi was saying it earlier, it's one of the best starts we've ever had to an Olympic Games, and the minute when Daniel won last night, we all woke up early this morning to a beautiful sunny day. So in every sense, in every sense of the word, Michael, Martin and William and the rest of your extended family, best wishes, Michael, and continued good health. Now, just before I finish this section, I want to go back to Kathleen and Breed. Kathleen and Breed, is there anything we can do to help you find your brother? Or do you think there's anyone in the States that could help you find your lost brother, so to speak?
Well, we've been on to people in the United States and it's been closed down, kind of.
Yeah.
It's a very complex story.
Okay.
And it's something, Joe, I discussed with you offline first before we go into it further.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because well, there's other people involved.
Yeah, of course, there always is.
Involved. You know?
But it's a tonic listening to the two of you, and continue good health and happiness. And you celebrate your birthday on the same day. You celebrate your wedding anniversary. Congratulations. You celebrate your wedding anniversary on the same day.
Yeah, the birth of our children at the same time. A shout out to just Eugene and Keith, the husbands.
Okay.
And also to just let you know, Dad passed away, like I said, nearly 4 months ago. He too was a twin.
Ah.
Not an identical twin, he had a twin sister.
Family. Okay.
And they are both now gone. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we talk to you soon, Kathleen and Breed and Michael and the Tully twins from Cogglebox and the Sock Company. Back at Odd Socks. Odd twin. No, they're not odd. They're very bright lads. Everyone is very bright today. Back after this break, Joe at rt.a5551text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at RTE.ie. Fascinating reaction to Deirdre McCarthy yesterday on the programme. Deirdre contacted us. She'd been listening to the stories about Bishop Eamon Casey over the past week. And the stories of abuse accepted, by the way, by the Diocese of Galway and Limerick. And indeed, from the statement by the Vatican, they knew of the allegations as well. And that's why they didn't send the Papal Nuncio to his funeral in Galway Cathedral. And that started the discussion, as you know, about the remains of Archbishop Casey being in the crypt of the Galway Cathedral, in the exalted crypt with four other bishops. And but Deirdre spoke about it's her next of kin, though. I think they'd be second cousins, but she was designated and always was known as the next of kin of Canon Dermot Fogarty from Ireland. And he passed away. She was asked, the church did all the obsequies and paid for everything. And there was cardinals there and bishops and priests. And Canon Fogarty got the full church clerical, ecclesiastical honours. And she was asked to pick an inscription for the headstone, which she did. And she wrote something along the lines of, he was this is as she knew him. But she realised she didn't know him after he died. He was a wise and good man. And then shortly thereafter, a book was published by a man called Dr. Stephen Bernard. And Stephen Bernard is an academic, was at that stage an academic. And he wrote a book after the death of Dermot Fogarty. And he detailed a horrific abuse that he had suffered at the hands of Dermot Fogarty. And indeed, I read the book last night. It's called Paper Cuts. And in terms of the trauma, the long lasting trauma from abuse, I don't think I've ever read anything as strong and as powerful. I'll give you one line before I talk to Lorraine. And Lorraine, good afternoon, by the way.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Thanks for talking. Just let you listen to this piece, because I know you want to talk as well about the trauma your husband suffered after he was abused as a seven-year-old. Fogarty died. This is from Paper Cuts by Dr. Sidney Bernard. He took with him my chances of vengeance, but my work told me of the meaning of reputation. I would leave judgment to his God, but disgrace him in the eyes of the world. I would soil his grave and deny him the bleaching agent, the power of a posthumous existence in the world. I excoriate and denounce him now and forever. Now, I'll also go into, I'll explain how and why that is so powerful. It's near the end of Sidney Brainard's book. Lorraine, tell us about your husband. He was seven.
He was seven, Joe, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to tell his story.
Yeah.
He is now deceased. When he was 7 years of age, they lived in North Dublin. Mm-hmm. And this Christian brother, I don't know if you remember, you might be too young, where we used to gather silver paper from cigarette boxes.
Mm-hmm. And
at school... Yeah. For the, excuse the expression, for the black babies.
Yeah, for the missions, yeah.
For the missions. So yeah. My husband gathered a lot of silver paper and told this Christian brother, who was his teacher, and he said to him, sure, come up to the parochial house after school with what you have, which he duly did. He was brought into the parochial house and the door locked behind him.
Yeah.
And was duly sexually abused by this Christian brother. He was let off out and sent home. And his father observed that evening that his lips were swollen and wondered what was wrong with him. So my husband duly told him what he had experienced at the parochial house. So his father brought him down to the local Garda station, who in turn went to the parish priest. And this all ended up with Archbishop McQuaid in the Bishop's Palace, Archbishop's Palace in Dublin.
Yeah.
And what he was told, you can imagine a seven-year-old boy standing in front of Archbishop McQuaid. And what he said was, the Archbishop, there will be no scandal. So they were taken home in a police car, and that was it. There was to be no more spoken about it. This Christian brother was taken out of the school, and everything in connection with him was destroyed. Photographs up on the wall of football matches, etc. And this man was shipped off to Canada, where we learned that he had since married and had two children.
And then the effect it had on your husband over the years, Lorraine.
Over the years, yeah. At 16 years of age, he went to Belfast and signed on with the British Army.
Okay.
After his training in England, I think it was Wales and Rhyl, they were shipped out to Malaysia, where he fought in the jungles there of the war at the time. And this was a 16-year-old boy.
And then you believe the events in his life and his life that you knew him in terms of your marriage, that he did suffer in various, he did show his suffering, or indeed maybe even trying to hide his suffering in different ways.
He tried to hide his suffering, but it was always there. It's like the trauma that your program was talking about yesterday. It's the fallout on the family. It's not just the abused person.
Yeah.
At that stage, there was no such thing as counselling or any care like that, and he wasn't offered any care. So when I met him, I heard this story about the abuse. I heard it a few times. And then I thought we'd get on with life. But this affected him so badly that he went through a lot of the addictions. Alcohol was like an anesthetic.
Okay.
He threw himself into his work. He was a workaholic. Yeah. It was like he was running all the time. Yeah. He didn't want to be still or steady, that this all would come back into his head. Then we had all the abuses that came out, Magdalen Laundries, etc., etc. So anytime we heard any of this on TV or the news, this would affect him. He bought every book that was ever written about anybody that was abused and would read through. So what I was really, the reason I emailed your show today was just to talk about the fallout for the siblings, spouses of the abused person and how this must affect thousands upon thousands of people.
And did your husband ever go for therapeutic help, Lorraine? Did he ever?
Well, as the years went on, I think what he really wanted was an apology from the church. So we did approach the Archbishop's Palace. This would have been quite a few years ago. And we did meet with a lay person there who took all the different details. And we felt maybe that something might have come out of that. There was sort of counselling offered, but never really taken up.
And was there was there ever an expression of belief in what your husband was saying?
Well, I suppose no. I felt he was. I felt they were just going through the rigors of all. You know, this is what they do when people come in. I just felt it was like it was just a token gesture.
And as I say, this again, the trauma, as explained by this man, Dr. Stephen Bernard, a victim of Dermot Fogarty, Canon Dermot Fogarty, originally from Cavan. I'll give you another example. And the book is a very hard read because he doesn't hold back. And one is anger, but two, the level of the abuse, insofar as you could ever, which you can't graduate or gradate them, the level of the abuse he suffered at the hands of this man was absolutely beyond belief. He had a number, Lorraine, of suicide attempts. He was then put on a drug called ketamine. And he wrote, "Ketamine has perhaps cured me of my condition. I retain the symptoms of depression, the sleeplessness, the somnolence, and apart from these old friends and rivals, I do not feel depressed. Ketamine has brought about the conditions to cure my condition. The extreme disassociation I experience when taking it is an end in itself. It makes it possible for me to recognise the truth that my mood is just an unhelpful thought, not the visitation of the eternal. Likewise, my paranoia, yes, my paranoia, something I own as I would own my own child, can be cured by the realisation that it is wrong, that the thoughts themselves and the reasons for them, their unrelenting reason, are wrong. I had to ask myself the question, was I afraid of being cured? What would it mean to me? What form would recovery take? Ever since I can remember, I have been ill. I own that illness as I own as myself. I would take courage to be well again. And when I was a child, I thought I had the courage to be a sick man, but the bravery that wellness would require was asking a lot of me. I had become a patient needing patient help. What would it mean to me to be impatient for the day, to seize the moment and live for that?" And as I said, this is the backdrop to this point he makes, which is a point I think that a lot of people were making last week about Bishop Eamon Casey. And then we had that fluffy statement from the Diocese of Galway saying they're thinking about it and they need to carefully consider and they need some peace and quiet and tranquility and mindfulness to decide what to do about the remains of Eamon Casey, which are in the crypt in the cathedral in Galway, the biggest, the tallest building in Galway now by a long shot. But that's neither here nor there. But the church are saying, please leave us alone. We need time to think about this and we need peace, tranquility and careful consideration and consult. And this is Fogarty, Dermot Fogarty had a stroke. And all along, Lorraine, Sidney Bernard was debating whether to go to the police or not. Now, he did go to the police, but the church obviously denied it. But then Dermot Fogarty had a stroke And this is what Sydney Bernard wrote. Fogarty declined over the following weeks, sometimes rapidly. The child protection officer in the diocese kept me informed as my family and the church waited for me to pounce, to report Fogarty's crimes to authority beyond their reasoning. Would I go to the police and speak out against a man who had done me such harm? He lost his movement, then he lost his voice. Silenced, I could not accuse a dumb man before the courts. Dying, I could only leave him to the judgment of a God in which he had robbed me of belief. And this is the sentence, the paragraph I read earlier, which I think might articulate what victims feel about the exalted reverence being shown to Bishop Eamon Casey. Fogarty died. He took with him my chances of vengeance, but my work told me of the meaning of reputation. I would leave judgment to his God, but disgrace him in the eyes of the world. I would soil his grave and deny him, the bleaching agent, the power of a posthumous existence in the world. I excoriate and denounce him now forever. And this is the point I think that Deirdre was making yesterday. And I know we had a caller who seriously and strenuously disagreed, in fairness, when Deirdre said she then went to Fogarty's headstone, and she there was a bit of a debate about who owned the church or her, but she actually had it sledgehammered because she wrote she picked the inscription and she wasn't happy with it. And the reason she had it sledgehammered, she said, because the headstone honoured him and in its own way dishonoured his victim, i.e. Sydney. And it's the same I'm hearing from our listeners over the last week. The exalted position of Bishop Eamon Casey in the marble and mahogany crypt in the most eminent and most prominent ecclesiastical location in the diocese, the Galway Cathedral, the most recent cathedral built from ground up in Ireland. The exalted position honours Bishop Eamon Casey, removing him from, and inter alia dishonours the victims, and removing him, which is what Sydney Bernard says here, removing him from the crypt would honour the victims, and that is the statement. Did your husband, he's passed obviously.
He has passed, and the reason I emailed your show, Joe, was just to tell his story for once, just to get it out there. But that statement from the Catholic Church in Galway is just typical. It is just typical. I listened to your show yesterday and I can relate to everything they're speaking about.
Yeah.
Anger. Like the anger that's in somebody who's abused is just, you couldn't quantify it. And to come out, as you say, with a fluffy statement like that about Bishop Casey's remains is an insult to these people who've been abused.
And Lorraine, you mentioned that he was a high flyer in business or whatever. Do you think his colleagues, his friends, obviously you knew, which must have come as some relief to him, but did many other people, would he have confided in other people of the abuse?
His immediate family would have known, but that was it. He just glossed over it, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe he would speak about it in company, but when these subjects would come up.
Yeah.
But, a few close friends would have known, but, he was hail fellow well met when he was out. Nobody would realise what he went through, except people who were close to him.
Okay.
But with somebody who's been abused, they have no confidence. Deep down, they have no confidence. The anger that's in them, it has to come out somewhere.
Yeah.
So in a lot of cases, addiction becomes a big factor. In our case, it was gambling.
Yeah.
And he went on to lose everything.
Oh, God.
Financially. But I was just trying to speak about how it affects a whole family.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not to people outside, but internally it certainly does. Very, very hard thing to live with, is somebody who's been abused.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
And does that mean he'd be unpredictable or?
Very unpredictable. Lots of highs and terrible lows.
Oh, God. And
so, Joe, thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Lorraine.
I appreciate you taking the call.
Well, God rest him, and kind regards to you and your extended family.
Thank you, Joe, for what you're doing.
Well, it's what people like you were doing, Lorraine. Lorraine, do you think he was abused when he was seven? He died 2 years ago. And Sidney Bernard says this in this book. And the book, almost like the email, which you're saying was cathartic to him. He said he's glad he wrote the book. Because it does centre on this horrific abuse. He does say the book was cathartic. But he's accepted that this will stay with him till the day he passes.
And absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's there all the time. It's there all the time.
And of course, go back and I'll remind people what you said earlier, that he was shipped to Canada.
That's correct.
Yeah, and remember, there's a shifting as well in the diocese of Arundel and Brighton, where Dermot Fogarty was based. There was a shifting by who was then Cardinal Murphy O'Connor, originally from Cork. He shifted again. Other abusers, not Fogarty, other abusers that had been caught, so to speak, abusing children, were simply shifted to another parish, which happened here as well, as you know.
At least my husband's father had the foresight to go down to the Garda station.
And the bravery, Lorraine.
And very brave. And I'm going back so many years.
Yeah.
He was a very brave man to do that. And I think that's why this Christian brother was shipped out so quickly.
Yeah.
Was because the guards were involved, you know, as they were not in a lot of cases.
Okay, Lorraine, well, God rest him, and
thank you, Joe.
Good health to you and your
thank
family.
Thank you.
Lorraine, thank you so much. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Nicola, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
Good. A very unusual call, I must say, in that you're saying the school holidays are second level, which are among the longest in all of Europe.
Yeah.
They're double what they are up in Northern Ireland. They're double what they are in the UK, up to 12 weeks. You're saying they're too short.
No, I haven't said they're too short.
Okay, my mistake. Okay, I stand corrected.
Yeah. So, no, what happens is that they're starting to creep back into August. So, like, my daughter's going back to school on the 23rd of August.
Okay.
Which the summer holidays would always last for July and August and go back. They'd always go back in September. So my query was, why are they coming back into August and not, why can't they just start in September? Like, you know, the new month.
And have you got an answer?
Have I got an answer? No,
yeah.
I was asking you. I thought you might come up with an answer for me.
Well, the first thing I did was I looked up the how we sit in terms of in comparison to other countries. And I'm going by an article in the Irish Times by Carl O'Brien. I think he's moved on now to another role, but he's a well-respected education editor in the Irish Times, and I read the first line from his article. Secondary students in Ireland have longer summer holidays and shorter school terms than most other countries in Europe. A European Commission report shows secondary school students in Ireland are required to spend at least 167, it's now 166 apparently, it's gone down, 166 days at school. Of the 37 countries included in the study, only France, Cyprus and Greece give their students a second level more time off.
Right.
So why is she going back in the middle of August?
Yeah, why can't it be September? I mean, I think maybe it should go further into May or June and just have July and August. It's just because my brother-in-law's mother was having an 80th, organised an 80th party for her, for all the grandchildren, and gather them from wherever they are around the place and different countries and everything. And she organised the week to have with them in the last week of August.
And you presumed...
And they, my sister, yeah, absolutely presumed that they'd all be there for the grandmother.
Yeah.
Yet most of them are back. Well, the ones that are at secondary school, second level, are all back at school that week.
And so, basically, we've asked the Department of Education, and the Department of Education basically said, as they do with most things to do with education, we've no power, we've no control. While standardised, I thought the dates were standardised a number of years ago. No, I know everything changed after COVID. Well, standardised arrangement, because remember, they have a midterm break in February, they have a midterm break in October. They have 2 weeks at Christmas, 2 weeks at Easter, and they've all and then they finish normally at the end of May. This is the second level. While standardised arrangements for breaks set out in circular, whatever, in 2022, now this is post COVID, it is not a requirement. Of these agreed arrangements, that the commencement or end of the school year, either at primary or post-primary level, should be standardised. So what is...
Right.
Now, I think what they're saying is midterm breaks happen around the same time. You know, that's very good of them.
Yeah, but when you were at school, it was always September, wasn't it? You know, back, it was never August.
I can't remember.
You're thinking back.
It was in a hedge.
It's only the other day.
It was a hedge school, is it? The expectation department. The expectations that the school year will normally commence during the week in which September the 1st falls.
Okay.
Now remember, your daughter's going back on August 23rd.
Yeah.
And I know the electric picnic is earlier this year, isn't it? Next week. But it used to be at the end of August, beginning of September. Anyway, that's I'm just thinking, are the festivals on? The expectation, school year will normally start, but they've no power. But the only thing the school must do now is meet the overall requirement of a minimum, which of course becomes a minimum of 1/6, it's actually reduced in the last 5 years, of a minimum of 166 days of post-primary, or 182 days, 182 days at primary level. And I go back into that Carl O'Brien article. In 15 countries, then remember, it's 166 in Ireland. In 15 countries, it's between 180 and 190. Okay, the number of days. So that's a big. And in some cases, it's 200 days, which they must. It's 200 days in Denmark, for example, and it's 200 days in Italy. Now, remember, Denmark took the very, it would never happen here, not in a month of Sundays, pardon the pun, or in a month of bank holiday Mondays, including this coming. Denmark, last year in a referendum, decided to sacrifice a bank holiday. Did you hear this story? They sacrificed a bank holiday. In other words, whatever Monday they normally got off for whatever reason, they all went to work as normal. That's gone in perpetuity. And the reason they said was the government said that the extra tax that they would generate that day through workers and business and all that carry on, the extra tax that would be generated that day would be put into the army because of the threat.
Really?
Because of the threat from Putin. Can you imagine Ireland? Can you imagine Ireland giving up a bank holiday?
No.
And I know other countries, some other countries have more, but we're not giving them up. But anyway, what do you think of the statement from the department?
Well, I suppose it's out of beyond my control, but they're just figuring out the days, aren't they? And they're whatever way they're falling, they're taking days back in August, aren't they? Rather than taking from the beginning of the summer, they're taking it from the end of the summer.
And what do you know what date the school broke up on at the end of May?
Well, it would be before the Leaving Cert, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the Leaving Cert begins on the bank holiday, June bank holiday Tuesday normally.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And normally schools finish at the second level, finish at the end of May, or indeed yeah. maybe a few days beforehand. But anyway, what are, so the school is back, what, 8-9 days earlier than other schools. So does yeah. that mean that they're going to, I presume they're going to take the days actually, during the year. Have you been given a calendar?
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
And what does that look like?
I mean, it just looks like, you know, I haven't counted.
Oh,
the
sorry,
days,
you didn't count the days. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I didn't count the days. You know, you just put write them, fill them in on your. But okay. No, I just wondered. I just wondered if yeah, you give me an answer, and you have. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we haven't really. I don't know why your the school in particular has gone back on August 23. The only thing we yeah. can ask is there any other schools, second level schools,
yeah.
going back on August 23. Okay. Thanks indeed. Cool. Thanks indeed, Nicola. Now, Nicola, you like were you educated here in Ireland?
I was indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
In the Bower,
So you're used to the, and they yes, they indeed. Are great, and we're all in favour of children. Given the world we live in, if any child can get the chance to have freedom and a bit of fun on sunny days, it's great. You learn more yeah. oftentimes, and we look at what's happening to children who can't leave their homes if they even have homes. But anyway, Nicola, thanks indeed. We'll see what we get on that. Joe at rt.ie 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
So we're back to identical twins. Amanda calls. Good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
And I'm told your twin, your identical twin, is on the other line. Are you there, Naomi?
Yes, hello. This is Naomi.
Okay. Amanda, you tell us your story. Are you still live together?
Yeah, we still live together. We've been living together all our lives. We're 52 years of age now. Obviously, we would have had relationships come yeah. back years ago.
Yeah.
But the relationships didn't work out. But we're both living at home with our parents. We're both caring for our parents.
And are you close? Like, do you go out together? Are you?
Oh, we're extremely, extremely close.
Wow, well
everywhere
done.
We go, we're with each other. We're inseparable, to be honest.
Okay. And yeah. Naomi, would you go on holidays together?
Yes, I love going on holidays with my sister. I won't go anywhere without her.
Brilliant.
Even if it's downtown, she'll come with me in the car.
And when you're walking downtown, do you link arms?
We actually do, yes.
Brilliant.
It's funny, yeah, when we're crossing the road, yeah, always linking each other.
Oh, God, that was the same with my two aunts, Rose and Reenie, God rest them. Everywhere they went everywhere. Now, they weren't twins, but they were sisters and they weren't married. And they went everywhere together and they linked arms no matter where they were. And
it's funny.
It's gorgeous. It's a lovely, lovely gift. And Amanda, have you got the same tastes in clothes and food? And
yes, unfortunately, it might be a bad thing, but we actually do have the same tastes in food. I mean, when we cook, we always cook the same dinners. If
okay.
Naomi is doing something, she'll cook for me. Or if I'm making something for myself, I'll make the same for Naomi. You know, vice versa. The same with clothes and we're shopping. It's unbelievable.
And but Naomi, you must disagree. Do you have the same? Do you like the same television programmes? Do you like the same newspapers, type of books? Do you like? Is there anything you disagree on, Naomi?
Not really, no. We have the same mobile phones, same phone covers, everything is the same.
Brilliant, brilliant. And you live together still?
Yes, we live together and we sleep in the same bedroom.
Ah, fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And do you wear the same jewellery?
In actual fact, we do. We're only after buying two lovely nomination bracelets outside in Cherish in the Crescent. And we have the same amount of links on them. The only thing is we picked a different charm each, but we'll probably end up with the same charms when we're finished.
Ah, that's fantastic. Fantastic. And did you, Naomi, ever fall out? Tell me you had a little tiff.
We did actually, only yesterday actually.
Go on.
Yeah. driving, oh, she was doing a bit of coughing in the back of the car or something, and I kept saying to her, God, can you ever stop that? And I kind of got mad, and I said, you can ever shut up that? And she says, I won't shut up tomorrow. Now, we do, we'll have our little tiff, might last about 5 minutes, but we're the best of friends we're finished.
Isn't that fantastic?
We're just so supportive of each other. Yeah. We never see each other stuck for anything. Or if I was running out of a few pence, a few bob, my sister would say, look, I'll never ever leave you without a few bob. Ah. And I'd be saying, oh, thank you so much. You're so good to me. Like.
And are your parents still alive, Naomi?
Well, my parents are still alive and doing well.
Great.
And first, we're lucky actually to have both my parents because they've had very bad mishaps, and my dad was only rushed off of Aer Lingus or Ryanair, should I say, a year and a half ago in Shannon Airport. Okay. And he was only, they were giving him 49% chance of survival. Okay. But lucky enough,
the two of them are there, and you're looking are you looking after them?
Oh God, only for us.
Well, Amanda and Naomi, you're looking, not only are you looking after each other, you're looking after your parents, and I'm told that your mum's birthday today, so happy birthday to Mrs. Mammy Call. Amanda and Naomi, thanks indeed. We're back tomorrow. Remember, we're in Carlo on Friday for the Bank Holiday Funny Friday, as today's producer is Owen McLaughlin, and Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.